Beauty and the Beast is a 1994 Broadway musical based on the 1991 animated Disney film of the same name. The first Disney musical on Broadway, it was hugely commercially successful and led to a strong era of the animated movies being adapted for the stage. The story itself follows Belle, a young French woman who yearns to escape her small town, but finds herself trapped by a beast in a nearby castle. She learns that he was once a prince, cursed to be a beast, until he can find someone who could love him. And there's a lot of singing furniture. My guest today is Felicia Fitzpatrick, Playbill's Director of Social Media and Creative Strategy. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Beauty and the Beast. So hello, Felicia. How are you doing?
I am doing good. I am ready to talk about Beauty and the Beast. How are you?
I am great. I'm so excited for this. So you chose Beauty and the Beast. Why did you want to talk about this?
Oof. Well, Beauty and the Beast has been one of my favorite musicals since like 2006, because that was the first time I saw it live. And of course, I loved the animated movie musical, but there was something about seeing the production live that I was like, Mom, I have to go buy the cast recording. And I just fell in love with it. And so I love to talk about it at any given moment.
That's amazing. And you saw it on Broadway in 2006?
Well, no, I didn't see it on Broadway. I saw the Christian Youth Theater production in Vancouver, Washington. But it was so great.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah, one of my friends from school was in it. So she's like, come see me in it. And then I was like, wait, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wait, okay. I want to say, usually I don't just assume that people have seen shows on Broadway, but it was just the way you said that, where you were like, I saw it, it changed my life, and I wanted the cast recording. And so I just assumed it was like the professional production.
Yeah, you would think. But no, shout out to that cast, because they gave performances that literally changed my life.
That's amazing. Yeah. Did you ever get to see it on Broadway?
I did not. Which is so weird too, because, you know, like with it opened when I was very young. Like, so I didn't really come into this musical theater fandom till it was almost like till it closed practically, because I think it closed in 2007. So I only discovered it like a year before that as like a musical property, right? So I was late to the game.
Yeah. Well, it might be coming back, so you get your chance.
I know. I will be front row every performance. Stand by Belle. Stand by every character in that show. I'm so ready for it.
Amazing. I had mentioned to you just before we started recording that I have a deep connection with this show. But the thing is that I actually was not familiar with the Broadway version at all. Like, I knew it existed, and I knew the stage version existed. But for some reason, I just have never, like, really gotten into any of the Disney Broadway shows. I think I just, because I'm just like more naturally drawn to stuff that I don't know the movie of. I don't know. I'm not trying to be like snobby about it. I just like happen to have not checked it out, but which is actually like very strange, because I'm bordering on obsession with Beauty and the Beast. I've seen the original movie so many times. I have it in Blu-ray.
Yes.
I have the I don't even care. I have the 2007 version. I have like seven Belle, like those pop figures. I have like seven different versions of Belle. I don't know. It's just one of those things.
I'm impressed. Yeah. Oh my gosh. When it gets you, it gets you.
It really does. You know, I just like, everybody needs that one sort of like Disney thing that they latch onto, and that's mine.
I mean, yeah, it's so true. Like, I feel like for our generation too, like, Disney was our introduction to musical theater. So it makes sense. You know, I feel like everyone has that one Disney movie that just made them love Disney, that made them love Broadway, musical theater, that they're so attached to. So I totally get it.
And I would wager a guess that probably a lot of people, like, way more people would know the movie than they would know the stage musical. The whole Disney on stage thing is a whole topic, which is this Beauty and the Beast was the first Disney musical on Broadway, and it sort of kicked off the whole thing. And now,
right,
Disney's,
yeah,
like this massive Broadway icon, but at the time they were like the upstarts, which is so funny.
Yeah.
The idea that Disney could be an upstart in any space, but they really were.
Right? I know, it's so fascinating to me that, and they, like, I guess people always talk about that they were the ones that, like, you know, quote, cleaned up Times Square, because like families were coming to Broadway again. So they were coming to Times Square. So they had to like expunge. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but like, you know, it was like had to kind of a tardy reputation. And so then Disney came in and was like, hey, we're going to produce Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. Come to us families.
Yeah. It's the 90s now. We got to clean everything up. This is going to become like family central.
Yeah. So interesting.
There's a lot to talk about with the actual show itself, but just I was researching into a little bit of the history of the adaptation process, and I read something on the Wikipedia page, which is the funniest thing I've ever read on Wikipedia.
Oh my god, I'm so ready.
So the writer of the original Beauty and the Beast movie was commissioned to adapt the animated film, Linda Wolverton, and there's this quote. Wolverton learned that Disney had commissioned her to adapt the animated film she had written into a Broadway musical while she was vacationing with her family in Maui, and her initial response to the idea was, yikes.
Really? I did not know that.
I died, and then I, like, looked up the source, because I was like, can that possibly be true? And it's, like, it linked to a magazine where it just quoted her as just saying, yikes, and that's the whole thing.
What a quote. Why, I wonder why. Did she ever explain why she felt yikes about it?
I think because they hadn't done that before. So I think they just rolled up and were like, hey, like, let's take an animated movie that you wrote and turn it into a live action stage production. And she was like, excuse me? Because that was unheard of at the time, basically.
Which is so, it's so wild to me. It's because it makes so much sense in my mind. But that's because I know it as being true, you know?
Yeah. It's amazing how, like, everything seems so weird, and then as soon as it's successful, it's like, yeah, of course that was successful.
Yeah, exactly.
While I was taking notes on this, I saw something later. Basically, the show got negative reviews, and as I was taking notes, I said, as Wolverton would say, yikes.
Oh my god. A new quote is just like, yikes. Over it. I feel like anything like that, like, you're taking a risk, you don't know how it's going to turn out, but that's when it's exciting, you know? I got to talk to Susan Egan for work, and I, first of all, died because I was like, you are an icon, and I can't believe I'm even speaking to you right now. But she said, I asked her, I was like, what did it feel like being in the rehearsal room? Like, you didn't know that you're going to be creating this legacy on Broadway. And she's like, no, like, we were just doing the work. We were just making art, and it was super exciting. So it's one of those things where you just have to take the risk.
Susan Egan is amazing. I love that you got to talk to her. That's so cool.
I still can't believe it. I was like, someone pinched me. I must be dreaming. I blacked out practically the whole time. She's just so cool.
I also was reading about her auditioning for it. This is all I'm bringing to it. It's just the Wikipedia page for Beauty and the Beast. You're welcome. But and they said that she was 22 when she did this, which is wild.
Oh my god. Are you for real?
I'm for real. 22, goodness. Basically an unknown, because they wanted to cast unknowns as an unknown as Belle, which is really cool that they went into it with that mentality. And then she decided to lean into the comic aspects of the character, and they really enjoyed that and liked how she wasn't just doing a copy of the movie version, and so she ended up getting the role after like 1,000 callbacks.
See, that's, like, hearing that she was 22 is insane to me, because I remember myself at 22 and trying to imagine 22-year-old Felicia, like, even fathom carrying a Broadway show. Like, obviously there's other principles, but, I mean, Belle is iconic. Like, that is some, wow, that would be so much pressure. I can't even believe, like, wow. Shout out to Susan Egan. I know she's listening to this podcast.
Yeah, she's an avid fan, actually.
Susan, we love you.
Yeah, I'm 22 right now, and I, like, I can't even keep plants alive. Like, I can't keep a Broadway show alive.
Yeah, I mean, that's bananas. Wow, good for her. But it's true. I mean, even listening to the cast album versus the soundtrack for the movie, like, Susan totally brings her own flair to it, and I mean, I guess she has more material to work with in terms of, like, more songs and stuff, but we can get into, like, how much I became obsessed with it after that classic 2006 CYT production, but, like, I studied all of her, like, vocal mannerisms in that cast album. Like, she really serves it up.
Wow. Okay, that's great. Love hearing that level of obsession.
It was very real, yeah.
A couple other notes on the development, though, is another one of the weirdest things I've ever read, which is that in something like 2004, 1994. Now I'm going to forget the exact date, which I should have written down. But basically, at some point, Toni Braxton was going to be cast as Belle.
Yes, yeah.
And she didn't want to do it. And another great line, she finally agreed to sign the contract under the condition that a brand new song be written specifically for her, which an intoxicated Tim Rice had drunkenly offered and promised.
Wait, this is on the Wikipedia?
Yes.
I feel like I've visited that page, but clearly not recently. Like, I did not know that. But that's amazing.
They've expanded. Yeah, because this is they wrote like a this, which never happens with Broadway shows, but they wrote a whole new song for this new person.
Right.
Which remains in the show to this day. But I love the detail that they were drunk when they did it.
Yeah, I didn't like, I mean, yeah, I knew about A Change in Me, but like, I did not know that an intoxicated Tim Rice offered it. That is incredible information to know. Like, that's fantastic. Oh my God. Yeah, I remember learning about that song because it's obviously not on the original cast album, but I learned about it through Annalise Vanderpool from That's So Raven fame, because she was singing it on like all the late night talk shows, and I saw it on YouTube and became obsessed with it. It's so good.
There's been a change in me, a kind of moving on.
It is a really great song. It's beautiful. I had to look up recordings of people singing it because it's not on any like studio recording.
Yeah.
None of us will ever be iconic enough to make Tim Rice write a new song for us in an already open Broadway musical.
I know. Drunkenly, no less, like, agreed. My God, that's fantastic. I can only imagine that Sardi's negotiating the details. That's the vision I'm bringing to this.
I have to imagine the producers were not thrilled about that decision, but it worked out.
I know. It's a bold move, but go Toni for making it happen. So did you ever see it on Broadway?
Oh, no. My first Broadway show was in like 2009, I think. So I think it was... Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a Disney musical on Broadway. Which again, like is...
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I like Disney and I like Broadway. You would think this would be a great thing for me. But I don't live in New York. So every time I'm there, there's always like a more pressing show I want to see. Whereas I know that like one day I'll see The Lion King or whatever, but there's really not a rush.
Right. That's fair.
But I do, if it comes back, they actually do revive it, which they've said they will, but there's been no official details of anything announced. But if they do, I'll probably go see it.
Yeah, you have to. For Toni, for Susan, for Tim Rice.
Who would you want to be Belle in the new one?
Oh my gosh, that's literally the hardest question I've ever been asked. I have no idea. I mean, myself, obviously, even though I could never sing any of that material. Although Home used to be my audition song in college, so, ooh. I would love to see, like, Hayley Kilgore would be interesting to me. I love her, and she's obviously good at playing, like, strong protagonist gals. Yeah. Rachel Zegler... she's gonna be in the new West Side Story movie. She's gonna be Maria. Then maybe someone like Ali Ewalt, who was Christine in Phantom. Yeah, I would be intrigued to see her take on it. Like, I feel like all three of those women would give different takes on it, and I would be down to see any of them. So producers, make it happen. Thank you.
Yeah, when I was started thinking about this earlier, just because. Why not constantly dreamcast things? But and then I was thinking about Rachel Zegler too, and then I was also thinking about maybe Eva Noblezada. I can never say her name. I always start and then it disappears away from me. But
Eva would be good. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, there's so many good actresses on Broadway now.
I know, and I feel like it's especially like women who are ready to play like strong women, like be, you know, at the forefront of the story with their own agency and their own authority over their lives, and like tell everyone what's up.
That should just be a tagline for every show that comes on.
Show everybody what's up. Yeah.
I do have to take a moment to recognize that the Susan Egan's co-star in the original Broadway cast was Terrence Mann.
Oh my God. I love Terrence Mann so much.
Yes. Okay. One, Terrence Mann is amazing. Two, he was in his 40s. Just both of those.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know who Terrence Mann was before Beauty and the Beast, I gotta be honest. Because I guess I knew Susan Egan from, I think I'd put the two and two together that she was like the voice of Meg and
yeah.
Coach Bartlett and Gotta Kick It Up, the famous Disney Channel original movie. But with Terrence, I was like, I don't know who this is, but he's got a really cool voice. And then, like, I discovered that his whole, like, long scroll of Broadway credits. Mm-hmm. And I am happy to report I've also met him through work and, like, embarrassed the hell out of myself. Because I was so excited to meet him. And I was just like, Terrence, Mr. Man, like, you are incredible. I've heard your voice so many times. You are the best. And it was embarrassing, but also perfect.
Wow. You really just give hope to all of the theater kids out there.
Yes, you too can embarrass yourself in front of all of your favorite Broadway actors. It's true. No, I mean, I've been so lucky to be able to, like, meet them. And it has, that's not lost on me. Like, it was, because Beauty and the Beast, seriously, like, what, even though I knew Disney, I knew musical theater, and I had been in a few shows, but Beauty and the Beast was, like, my first introduction to, like, Broadway as an industry, I think is what I want to say. And so I used to listen to that cast album, like, all the time. When I was in high school, I tell this story a lot, but I used to, like, go home after school and, like, get my props. Like, I had a basket, I had a book, and I would reenact the entire cast album from beginning to end by myself in my room, like, in front of my mirror. And it just, I loved it. Because it's such a good score, and it's such a good story. So getting to meet them was like a dream come true.
That all of that is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
It's embarrassing, but it's the truth. Like, I really went through an obsessive phase, and when I was done reenacting with my props, I would go online, and I would go on, I think it was MTI shows, I think MTI licensed it, but whatever it was, I would go on there, and you could find out where the nearest production was, like, to your town. So this was the summer between, I guess it was between sophomore and junior and senior year of high school. I would literally, like, look up the nearest place, and I'd be like, Mom, there's a new Beauty and the Beast production, and we would drive to go see it. And I saw maybe 10 or so during those 2 or 3 years. Yeah. Yep.
Oh,
yep,
my
yep,
God. Yep. That's amazing.
Yep, 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 yep.
Wait. I want to circle back to your whole musical Beauty and the Beast path here, but just a moment. Have you seen lowbudgetbeast.tumblr.com?
I have. I've been to that Tumblr, and okay, it's incredible.
Yes. For those who don't know, there is a Tumblr. It's no longer active, tragically. But for a little while, it maintained, just as you were saying, there are so many local productions of Beauty and the Beast. It's a really great show to do with, like, high schools or just community productions, all this good stuff. But the thing is, costuming the Beast causes problems when you have very low budget. So this Tumblr just compiled images of low-budget Beasts, and they're incredible.
Yeah, there's some gems on there, honestly. Like, they're good. They're so good. A friend of mine, actually a guy I work with who is a friend, but, like, we'll send each other messages just, like, randomly throughout the day of, like, have you seen this one? And it's just, it's so good.
Yep. And it's all, like, it's not there to make fun of them, because it's just such a silly costume that there's some of them that you, like, you're scrolling past and you're not prepared, and then you just start looking at it, and the longer you look at it, the funnier it becomes. And this will be linked in the show notes, but I just really recommend checking out this Tumblr, everybody.
Well, it's true. Like, yeah, it's not to make fun. It's because that costuming, not even just for the Beast, but, like, Lumiere, Mrs. Potts, like, all of them, Cogsworth, that is hard. Like, that's challenging. And if you don't have the budget, you got to get creative, and people get creative, and I salute them.
Yeah, and I mean, frankly, even the Broadway Beast just looks ridiculous, because it's like, there's no, put in real life, the Beast does not look anything but silly.
Yeah, it's just one of those, like, fantastical magic, you know, like fantasy creatures, I guess you would say. So making that realistic is must be a fun challenge for the costume and wig and makeup team.
Yeah, I bet. okay, but costuming diversion aside with that, I want to talk to you more about what you were saying and like becoming so obsessed with this show. And you mentioned that it was what sort of got you into Broadway as an industry. Do you want to say any more about that?
Oh, yeah. So, of course, the acting part of it, the performing side, like, was always so fun because I grew up as a performer and a dancer. But, so I had my, like, three sections. I would, like, perform it. I would look up local shows. And then if I was not doing one of those, I was watching YouTube videos of the behind-the-scenes stuff, of the red carpet, like, of their opening night. And I just remember I would make s'mores and I would watch these YouTube videos late at night after my mom had gone to bed. And I just was so enamored and so fascinated by this world because I guess I knew that existed, but that was when it really clicked as like an actual viable career or, you know, like an industry to go into professionally. And yeah, I just remember thinking, wow, how cool would it be to be at the opening night of a Broadway show? Like, it looks so glamorous. And like now, of course, for my job, I get to go to those openings. And it's just so like full circle. It's so cool to think like now, oh, I can help create content that's like inspiring kids who are listening to the cast album over and over again and what have you. But yeah, so it helped me realize the Broadway industry as a true like career path.
Oh my gosh, I really want Beauty and the Beast to come back now just so you can do press coverage of it because that would be amazing.
Oh, you know what? I hadn't even really thought of that for whatever reason with the revival, but like, yeah, that I would cry. I think I would shed a tear. I do.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, yeah, I want to manifest that. I like that.
Yeah, well, I fear putting this episode out there is hopefully going to help the manifestation of this musical to actually happen.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, it was announced 2 months ago, and we have gotten no information about timeline or director or anything.
We need more. I guess they just want to announce it, like, in the honor of the 25th anniversary. And I'm just like, but we need, like, tangible action steps here, folks.
Yeah. And, I mean, Disney is Disney, so I'm more likely to believe that they'll actually do it once they've officially announced they're doing it, you know? So hopefully it's soon.
I would love that. Please, Disney gods, please.
Little do we know, in 10 years, every theater on Broadway is going to be a Disney musical, so.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Well, I just want, you know what? I'm happy they announced Hercules like that. I'm excited for. I've been waiting for that one for a long time.
Oh my god. I don't live in New York, and it's really sad, simply because I can't see New York theater for no other reason. Sorry. But but I saw that that was announced, and I was like, because I'm going to be there for a couple days in July. And then I was oh my God. And then I realized that, like, it does not start until after I'm there. So I'm like, well, never mind. I don't get to enjoy Hercules.
But it's also a very small window of time that they're doing it.
Yeah.
Sadly.
But yeah. I love how we have talked about this show this much and have not spoken one word about the plot.
Right. Sorry, we haven't even talked about the actual story. We just talked about it as a concept.
But I feel like probably most people are at least a little familiar with the plot, but we still should give it some time, I guess.
Yeah, let's break it down.
Beauty and the Beast is a tale as old as time, a song as old as rhyme.
Beauty.
Oh, yes.
Yes. But yeah, the TLDR version is that there's a young woman named Belle. She lives in the French countryside. It's all very like French aesthetic, even though everyone speaks English. But and then her dad is Maurice. And then he gets lost in the woods. And the beast is, I am telling this story terribly, but I guess I'm telling it from Belle's perspective is what I jumped into.
It's good.
Yeah. So Maurice gets trapped in this castle that's owned by the beast. Belle comes to rescue him and she ends up making a switch. So she is going to be captive instead of him. If that seems like a weird premise, it is. but it works how they do it.
Somehow works. Yeah.
It makes sense in plot somehow. But now Belle's a prisoner, and she gradually learns that the Beast was a prince who was cursed because he judged by appearances. He was cruel. He was not welcoming to, like, an old woman who needed help. And so, surprise, she was a witch. So he's been cursed to live as a beast, and all of his servants have been turned into, like, candlesticks and clocks and wardrobes and stuff, which really sucks for them because they didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Yeah, and then there's the magical rose that's placed in a very dramatic place in the castle, and then he needs to find someone who will love him and that who he can love before the last petal falls off the rose, or else he'll be cursed to live as a beast forever. Ta-da.
That was beautiful, yes.
Yeah, and then spoiler, it's Belle.
Yes, it is. In a beautiful finale that, like, literally, that transformation scene is just, it never fails to, like, to surprise and delight. I'm like, oh my god, even though I've seen it so many times, I'm like, yeah, he's a prince! And it's like, too much.
How do they do that on stage?
I'm trying to think of some to highlight because they all differ and, like, kind of blend together. But basically, I think it comes down to a couple different versions. Either, like, one, I think it's a guy dressed up like the Beast, but it's not actually the Beast. So maybe he has on, like, a furry hood and a cloak or something. And he does the whole fight scene with Gaston. And then he can just, like, remove the hood and be the prince at, like, after the transformation. Or they do... I don't know. I think that they do, like, strobe lights and, like, fog machines, and he somehow, I don't know if he can wipe off his makeup that fast, but they definitely, there's, like, some actual stage magic happening, because every time I'm, like, surprised and delighted of, like, how did they do that? Yeah, I'm trying to think of other ones, but I think those are the two, like, big ones, whether either it's a stand-in or he, like, somehow wipes his makeup off really fast. That can't be. I don't know. Disney does it again.
That would be a really funny thing to attempt.
Well, I know. I'm like, that can't... I'm not sure. Because now that I say it out loud, I'm like, that can't possibly be. But they, like the Beast talks during his fight with Gaston, unless that's a voiceover, right?
I don't know.
I'm now trying to solve this in my head. Or I'm stumped and, like, kind of embarrassed. I haven't thought it out in this much detail before. Because I guess I turn into a six-year-old anytime I see Beauty and the Beast. And I'm like, I don't care. It's stage magic.
I'm sorry that I've set you on this path, and now I've given you this thing to think about.
Like, falling down the rabbit hole.
You're just going to have to go see it again.
Yes. You know what? That's a great, great thought. I'll say this. There's a lot of fog and a lot of strobe light, and then the rest is a question mark. It's a stage secret.
That seems pretty solid to me.
I'm not sure. I'm like, how have I not really thought about this? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, at any rate, I will say that I think that I love this show, as I'm sure that you can empathize with, so much because of Belle and just how wonderful Belle is as a character, how much I want to be her. When I graduated from high school, I decorated my cap with the line, "I want adventure in the great wide somewhere."
Oh my god, yes! I love that.
Yeah, so that says a lot about me.
I mean, you know, I guess there's always a constant conversation about Disney princesses and whatnot, and her being one of the top in terms of, like, her own personal agency. And I think all of them do in different ways, but she's just very vocal and she speaks her mind, you know? So you think about, like, the scene of her when she actually first meets the Beast, I guess, and is willing to do that switch with her dad. Like, she, as soon as they switch and he drags Maurice off and throws him out, she's like, "You didn't even let me say goodbye." Or, like, you know, when she gets put in the room she's staying in, she's like, "I'm not impressed by your castle," or she doesn't say that exactly, but that's, like, her mood. Or she's, you know, she'll say, "I'm not eating dinner with you," and I don't know, she just is very vocal about standing up for what's right and for what she believes in, and it's inspiring. But she's still willing to be open and, like, love this creature, which we do not necessarily need to get into the bestiality part that people bring up all the time. We're just gonna, like, let that go. But, like, she, like, sees his heart for what it is, and helps him peel back the layers to like find the more honest, more true version of himself. Truer. I can't even speak. I'm so emotional about Beauty and the Beast. My God.
Brief aside, I was listening to the soundtrack earlier, and there's a moment when Gaston, who's Belle's love interest slash the villain, not love interest. He likes her. He is the villain of the show.
Her suitor. Yeah. So,
yes, her pursuer. But she's like, he's not a beast. He's very kind and blah, 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 whatever,
gentle and
whatever
kind,
she says there.
Yeah.
And then he goes, do you have feelings for him or something like that? And then the first thing that popped in my head was like that awkward moment when the girl he has a crush on is a furry.
Yeah, I know people bring it up, but I'm just like, I mean, it just, yeah.
Yeah, there is just, we're not going to think about that too much. It's fine. It's a cartoon that they put on stage. Some things just translate strangely.
Right. And I'm like, you could think of him as like, he was a beast figuratively, if it bothers you or something. Like, you know?
Yeah.
He was a monster figuratively.
It is, it's all a metaphor. And you just have to remember that.
It's all a metaphor.
Yeah. But no, Bella's, she's so driven by what she wants. And it's, I think that people like to also make a lot of comments that are like, oh, Beauty and the Beast is about Stockholm Syndrome. And it's like, well, no, it's not. And I will defend it to my death. But this is something that's like, she's not following people just because. She doesn't like just defer to the men in her life or like is seeking to be rescued. Like, she honestly like has her own goals. She's following those goals. And then when people treat her kindly and earn a place in her life, then she like goes to bat for them. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, even contrasting Gaston and the Beast, like, she sees through, even though Gaston looks cute or whatever, supposed to be like masculine and handsome and blah blah blah, she sees that his heart isn't pure and isn't nice, you know. She sees past his like quote good looks, whereas the Beast may not be like conventionally attractive because he's a beast or whatever, she sees that like underneath all of it he like is a good person.
Yeah, it's actually kind of frightening how relevant Gaston is as a villain in sort of our age of toxic masculinity in those conversations.
So true. Yeah, absolutely. And like trying to control her and like, why are you reading? Yeah, for real.
The people who wrote Beauty and the Beast in the first place knew what they were doing, like Linda Wolverton and Howard Ashman, like they knew what they were doing when they wrote this.
They did.
It is literally okay, I just can't stop quoting Tale as Old as Time, but I mean, it is. It's timeless. That's the whole point. One thing that is kind of funny about the show, though, is that the whole message is that, like, to learn to love people not based on appearance. But the ending message, and I've seen this in multiple pieces of media, where it's like seek love and genuine human connection, because at the end everyone will all be hot and rich.
Right, that they end up turning into like this conventional attractive person anyway. There's some plot holes, I guess, but like, we just roll with it.
I really wish that I would love to see a version of Beauty and the Beast where, and obviously on stage, like, not everybody who plays the Beast is obviously, they're just like normal people, they're not like superstars or whatever, but like in movie versions or whatever, they always make the Beast super hot at the end, and I would love for him to be like a very normal looking guy, and or like not a conventionally attractive guy, and it's just like a person. And that's because he doesn't have to be hot. Like, the whole point is that he doesn't have to be hot.
Right. And like, why is she getting rewarded with that if she didn't care to begin with, quote unquote rewarded? But yeah.
On that, though, what do you think about the 2017 movie version?
Okay, let me tell you something about that. Because, so the friend, that my coworker friend that we send, like, funny photos to each other all the time, he was like, Felicia, we're obviously used to seeing Beauty and the Beast together, right? And I was like, duh. So he's like, I'll get the tickets. I'll take care of it. I was like, great. And the day comes, we go with two other friends, and we walk in the theater like, they're welcome to the 4D Max version. I'm like, what is the 4D Max version? I don't know if we all know what I did not know what that was. It is where not only is it in 3D, but your chair moves things are sprayed at you. You can smell aromas. And I'm like, now hold on. I did not sign up for this. So when the I'm trying to think of an example. When the wolf scene is happening or whatever, like your chair is moving, like you're in the forest, like running around, riding a horse, whatever. When there's a moment where a horse pees or a dog pees or something happens with pee and they sprayed water on us. And I was like, no. This simply won't do. So I was so taken aback by that. I don't know if I really took in the movie, but yeah, it's for me, like it was weird, interesting, whatever you want to call it, to see like a new version of it when I love the movie so much and I love the stage version so much, but like the story still stands in my mind, like the atmosphere of the world stays the same for me, so I still liked it, but it was an interesting experience to see it for sure.
Yeah, I can see how that would also just kind of be distracting.
Right? The pee. I was like, did they really just spray water on us like a dog peed on us or whatever animal?
But yeah, I think I feel kind of similarly. Was that I like it, and I think visually I like seeing what they did with it and all that. I think it's fine. I did found it very interesting, though, when I was learning more about the stage version, because I feel like they didn't pull songs from the stage version, but there are like songs in the movie, in the live action movie version, that they added that are like clearly inspired by songs from the stage version. So that was interesting.
Yeah. And the new song they put in, Evermore, that Dan Stevens sang as the Beast, which that whole, like, they had this additional scene, gosh, I don't even remember that well, but like where I think they explored like Belle's mom.
Yeah, like Belle's mom died of the plague, and also the Beast can travel through time. That was weird.
Right, exactly. So I was like that. I was like, not believable, but is any of the story like truly realistic? No. So we'll just take it as it comes.
But yeah. Evermore was like the big song that they added for the live action version. But I just found it funny because it felt like it was very inspired by one of the songs they added for the stage version, which name just flew out of my head. The If I Can't Love Her is what I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Goodness improve me. No power on earth if I can't love her.
Yeah, where I feel like that's, like, they were like, we can't take the songs from the Broadway version, so let's just rewrite this.
Right.
And make it a little different, put it in a little different place in the story.
Yeah. I mean, so did you say you had seen a stage production of it at all or no?
No, I've never seen any stage version.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's like, I mean, it's because it's interesting to see it on like in person when we're so used to seeing it on the screen, I think. But that 2017 version gave a little more, I feel like it's a little more like the stage version because there's people, you know what I mean? Like because it's live action.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But even still, like, the in terms of the script and stuff, I'm trying to think, like, it stays very close to the animated version. Like, obviously there's new songs and, like, bits of dialogue here and there, but the stuff that's pulled from the movie is true to the animated film.
Yeah. Which makes a lot of sense, because it's written by the same people, and they're not trying to, like,
reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. They're like, we got it right the first time.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it really is, I know people think it's cheesy or whatever, but I just really do think it's a special show, and that's because it's, like, become, like, I became obsessed with it and stuff, but, no, I think it is just such an exciting stage show. Like you said, they do it everywhere in local community productions for a reason, because it is like one of those things where a lot of people can be involved, and it's like a family show, and it's just honestly like feel good. Like I just went and saw it at Paper Mill, like 2 weeks ago, right before the Tony Awards.
Oh.
And it was like, I cried during the opening notes. It was like, bomb, bomb. And I was like, okay, here we go. And like, cried several times, and having different actors, or seeing different actors play the role, like you always learn something new from the characters and from those actors. Like actually last summer I saw it down in Austin, Texas at a theater called Zach Theater, which I used to work at when I went to school down there. And it was the first time I had seen a Black Belle, and she was amazing. I talked to her after and I was like, I want you to know how much this means to me. Like, I've grown up loving this show, but I've never seen a woman of color at all, I guess, now that I think about it, play this role. So it meant a lot to have you portraying her, and it was so beautifully done. And then at Paper Mill, there was a Black man playing LeFou. And so it's just like, you know, there's so many different layers to these characters, and having different actors of different races, or I've never seen a gender bent production, but that would be cool. Or like, you know, having people of different abilities and stuff too. Like, there's so many different things to explore with these characters, and I just love it. And the end.
Yes, absolutely. Like, this is, and I think that you make a good point there. There's so much room to explore. I feel like these characters have the opportunity for so much depth and so many different interpretations and like directions that can be taken with this show. And like being able to present different people in these roles. Like, I feel like with so many things, they're like, well, we can't have like people of color because they're in France. And it's like, what? Excuse
right.
me?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's they're like, also no. candelabras. Like, that, we're not even going to get, there's so many problems with what you just said.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. That's, yeah, it's just like, we're suspending our imagination. Like, of course we can have anyone of any ethnicity play these roles.
Yep. I just tried to look up to see if there's one happening in Chicago soon. Apparently there just was one in January and I missed it, but it's fine.
Oh, no.
I'm sure it'll come back around soon. There is going to be, listen, in Park Ridge, Illinois, there's a Beauty and the Beast Junior happening on
yes.
Monday as we're recording this. And I'm not going to go, but how funny would that be?
I would fully support you 100%. I was just tallying while we were talking the shows that I've seen. I think I've remembered them all. And I've seen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 different productions, maybe more. But like, it never gets old, okay? So you can go see that Disney Junior one, and then you can see another production, and it would be so great.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. Are you ready for the lightning round?
Let's do it. Let's just dive right in.
All right. Your favorite song?
This is so hard. I love... I know. This is like
first
not
question.
Gonna be a lightning round. I'm like, this is too difficult. Well, because of course, like during my like intense obsession, I had my mom buy the piano sheet music. She has a piano at her house. And so I love to play, like even when I go home now, I love to play... I love to play Home and If I Can't Love Her, but I like love the ending transformation scene. We love to watch Monsieur Dark Song. What is it called? Maison de Lune. And Belle is also a classic. Mm-hmm. Something There is one of my favorite to do with my prop basket. Okay, this is so hard. Oh boy. But then also the iconic title song. How am I to choose? Okay, if I had to play one right now, I think I would choose... Oh my god, I literally did not think it was going to be this hard. I think I have to go with... Today I'm feeling Something There.
All right.
There's something sweet, but it almost kind of... Duh. Okay, I'm done.
I do. I love that one. Oh my, I feel like I just heard you go through an entire roller coaster of emotions.
I know. I am so sorry you had to witness that. But like that was, I had to process all those different emotions.
I'm sorry if any of these questions continue to trigger that kind of reaction. But the next question is, what is your favorite line?
Ooh, also a good question. Let's see. Now, this is line, not lyric, or does that include both?
Yeah, including lyrics.
Oof, 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 oof. Let's just go with this, because otherwise I'm going to have another emotional roller coaster. But I love when Mrs. Potts, I think it's right after Human Again, or right after, it's somewhere in the second act, and it's like when they're falling in love, and, or no, I think it's when the Beast lets her go and she's headed back. Oh my god, I also love the Mob song. Okay, this whole show is just fantastic and I can't ever choose a song. Anyway, here I go with my other emotional roller coaster. But I think it's when the Beast lets Belle go to go find and like take care of her dad. And Mrs. Potts like, well, yeah, he finally learned to love. And I just feel it's like such like it's like the crux of what the show's about.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm having a mental breakdown with every single one of these questions.
I completely understand.
Okay.
Who's your favorite character?
Whew. I'll say Belle.
All right.
Just because she's like, yeah, because she and she's, I guess Beast has the like most character growth, but she like learns and expands in different ways too, which I appreciate.
Yeah. And if you were going to play a character, who would it be?
Well, I guess Belle. I mean, like, because that would be like the dream role. If I could sing and like all of that stuff, I would love to be Belle. Realistically, like personality wise, I feel like I'm more of a Babette, like in terms of a, like, character type for me, but Belle would be the dream.
No, I can see you rocking as Belle.
Yes, thank you.
The next question is, who would you recommend go see this show? And I know you're probably going to say everyone, but if you can think of a specific subset, who would you specifically recommend for this?
I mean, like, how granular should I get? I guess, like, you know, I think it's a great show for young people because it's like a Disney show, I guess. And because it just like made me appreciate theater more as an art form. And then I don't know if this is too specific, but also I feel like stage managers, like designers, all of that stuff, like it is so creative and so intense in that way that like if you're wanting to be a lighting designer, if you're wanting to do scenic or costumes or anything like that, like this is a show for you to just like understand the technical aspects of theater.
All right. I like that answer. As for the record, someone once answered that question with my mother. So you can be as specific as you want.
I love it. My mom has seen it so many times because I've drug her to all of them. So mom, we should go see it again.
Moms are great. And finally, if you could combine this show with another one, what would it be?
If I could combine this show with another one, which would it be?
Yeah. Some people have interpreted this question as in, like, if you were going to see a double feature, who would you want to do it? Or, like, a combining of plot, combining a creative team.
Oh, okay. Okay, I like that. I like that. Then I would combine it with my other favorite musical, In the Heights. Because I would love for, like, Lynn to... not that those songs need changing at all because they're perfect, but maybe he could do like arrangements with Alex Lacamoire or something like that and have Andy Blankenbuehler do some choreo and like, I don't know. There's some fusion of like Beauty and the Beast in the barrio. I don't know, but I love both of those shows so much.
The revival we all truly need.
Exactly. I'm going to pitch it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me and letting me ramble and freak out about Beauty and the Beast.
This was absolutely delightful. And thank you all for listening.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. And if you have a few minutes, I would love to get your input at the listener survey linked in the description. This is the last episode of season 3, so we'll be taking a little break before coming back for more episodes. If you have a show you want us to cover or a guest you want to hear from, make sure to take the survey and let me know. Thank you for listening, and see you soon.